Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to another experience of Me and Paranormal You. This is your buddy, Ryan Singer. I'm very excited today. I've got Desiree with me. We're going to talk about hypnosis and who knows actually what else. Desiree is certified hypnosis instructor and ICBCH. You're a dream guide, past life regression therapy, advanced Akashic Records practitioner. You're a consulting hypnotist on some, you do animal Reiki certification as well, or been certified.
I'm certified. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. My mom used to do that on a, years ago for a dog that her and my stepdad had. And the vet was just astounded how long that dog lived.
Wow.
It was always just like, I don't know how your dog's still alive. And my mom's like, well, because I do Reiki on it. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being here today.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think, most people, when they think of, hypnosis and specifically past life hypnosis is probably where, I think a lot of intrigue and interest in the past life variety of in the hypnosis field. Do you find that's what most people who come to you are looking for?
I thought more would actually. I think it's like a novelty factor and a lot of people are interested in it, especially skeptics. So I think when I do group past life hypnosis, it's the opportunity for a lot of skeptics to come, and they almost always have an experience. And that's because of the way I frame it, because I do love past lives, but I also love the way the subconscious works, which is in story, narrative, symbolism, metaphor. And so like when you set a strong intention at the outset, you're always going to get something from that experience, whether or not it was true. I have had people who were able to get actual like grave sites and make connections and verify things that they experienced in hypnosis. But I think it's more about giving the opportunity for transformation and discovery within your own subconscious mind. So I always imagine that there would be more people coming for that, but it isn't so much that, but I do think that that's because of how I explain hypnosis. It can be quite rapid. We can experience pretty big changes in a very short window of time in just one session very often.
So. Yeah, it's really cool. I guess being wrapped up in this world, I can kind of forget that outside of the bubble, there's most people probably don't think about past life hypnosis in their daily lives. They're not like us, like thinking about it like every day. It just will just pop in and be like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? How long have you been doing this, by the way?
Hypnosis specifically, I've been doing since like 2015, and I started practicing in 2017. So, but my before that, Reiki and all the mystical stuff.
So you were drawn to that path, or this general, like this mystical, this holistic and alternative medicine, I guess we can call it too, to some degree, when you were younger?
Yeah, very young. I mean, I was an only child and I was into weird stuff and I had to entertain myself. And I, you know, looking back, I think that that's how I always had this connection with an unseen realm. And I never really lost that because I was kind of alone a lot and I enjoyed it, actually. I'm a very creative person, so I'd always get ideas and I feel like I'm always drawing from another place. And I don't feel alone very often because of that. So but yeah, I was also very sick as a kid. And, you know, this was like in the 90s. So like it was before the internet, really. So very much like alternative medicine. I mean, that was before that was really hard. It was hard to come by. And I was on all these drugs. I'm actually thankful that I am alive today. I was like totally poisoned as a kid, just trying to be treated for a host of autoimmune conditions. And that's what sent me to the bookstore and my, like, you know, and or the library and just researching my diagnoses, but also finding my way to the occult section, which actually made me feel a lot better and gave me more empowering kind of tools. It made me feel, you know, empowered in a situation where I otherwise didn't at all. I felt like I had no control. And so, yeah, I was, that's where I learned about Reiki, like in like middle school, and hypnosis too, and meditation. And then, yeah, many years later, as I tried hypnosis just on a whim, not really even knowing what I was going in for, I kind of realized like, oh, like this is what I was doing all those years. Even when I cast spells, like I didn't think of that as working to change my own perceptions. I never thought of using my very familiar meditative mind space as like a place to change how I experience life outside of that space. And it can happen quite quickly. So yeah, I don't know, lifelong. So,
yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Long Island, New York.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm always fascinated by only children. I was the middle child, so kind of like the opposite. I mean, you know, in some ways you feel alone surrounded by people as a middle child. But, you know, I have some friends who are only children, and it is fascinating to see which way they go with their personalities. You know, because some only children are just like, it's my way or the highway, because it's always just been my way. So I've never had to share. But the that's really cool, though, to think about the only child who still doesn't feel alone by, you know, being tapped into, I guess, the cosmic and the, you know, the paranormal world around them, whether it's like, was it spirits, imaginary friends? How do we characterize it?
Yeah, I definitely had an imaginary friend, which I think is so interesting because its name was my mom's name, Susan.
Oh, wait a second.
Isn't that weird? I don't, let's not even go there.
Wait a second. You said his mom, his name, or its name was my mom's name?
I think I said its name.
Okay. Because I was like, yeah, this is some advanced cultural, you know, friendship dynamics. The okay, so you had an imaginary friend. We won't discuss the origin of the names, or, you know, why it. How active was this imaginary friend in your life?
It was pretty much ever present. And they would kind of tell me stuff, like, and give me little ideas about things and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think about that much. It's just something I guess I kind of take for granted, but I did, but I was always interested in spirits and aliens specifically. And I always thought I was one, and ghosts. I wanted to be like a parapsychologist. That was like probably the first thing I wanted to be when I grew up.
Oh my God. That's so cool. God, I wish I could remember the name. I think it's Northern Georgia University. I was just looking at this, I don't know, in the last couple of years. So it's been a minute, but it's because I was trying to find, okay, where can you still get like a doctorate or a master's degree in parapsychology? And I think Northern Georgia University is the only major like university, I guess, mainstream, quote unquote, university that still had that program when I was looking into it. That is, how did you get turned on to parapsychology as a kid? And like,
I don't know. You know, my mom had those Time Life series of books of the mysteries or whatever that those were, you know, and I just loved watching like Unsolved Mysteries and ghost shows. And then later, like at the bookstore, I got into Hans Holzer books. And even at the advent of like eBay, one of the first eBay purchases I made in the 90s, the late 90s, was some out of print Hans Holzer books, The Ghost Hunter, Parapsychologist.
Oh, my God. Do you still have those?
I do, yeah.
Wow, did you happen upon to watch the series The Holzer Files?
I watched a few episodes of it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think I know Dave Schrader, who I've known for a handful of years now. I was very excited about that project when they were ramping up to get it out, like getting the chance to go back through Hans's original files, like having access to Holzer's stuff, and then being able to kind of go through and maybe even try to complete or revisit at the very least those investigations. Now, did you just, so give me like a, I don't know, give me like a general like age range, I guess, when you're digging into like Hans Holzer from eBay, when most people probably had never even heard of eBay or Hans Holzer at this point.
Well, that was probably like 1990, I don't know, 8 or 9. I don't know, my last year of high school. So, but before that, I was finding his books like probably in middle school, like 7th or 8th grade, some of his like, you know, Ghosts of New England or things like that. And that's where I discovered Edgar Cayce too, which was my first introduction to hypnosis when I didn't really know what it was, but, and all these things.
Now, were you running around with like a ragtag group of weirdos at this point?
Yeah.
You mentioned aliens, and you very briefly said, for a minute, you know, thought I was one. I'd like to revisit that.
Yeah.
Because I think that's interesting. I think as children, there are different ways that maybe we don't feel connected, or we can feel isolated, or we feel different. And I think that's normal to feel different. I think every child at some point feels different or has moments of not belonging.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is how we frame those feelings and where those feelings come from. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, it's more than just like, it's a social isolation feeling that I'm framing in this way because I really enjoy alien movies and books. What was how long and how strong was this feeling of being an alien? And do you have more details about that?
I do. There's a few points on the non-existent timeline of that. So some of my earliest dreams that I remember, and I do teach dream work, and I always say, like, if people don't remember their dreams, which I didn't for a long period of my life, go back to the most memorable ones, because we all have at least one dream that we remember in our lives, right? So my most profound dreams were this, like, they involved being not in this realm, in this dimension, and knowing all of the information of the history of the universe, and just like knowing it and seeing it and feeling it, and kind of like a montage of images superimposed at warp speed and stuff like that, being in some kind of spacecraft and seeing that, or experiencing planets. Like I had a really, in fourth grade, a very visceral dream of Jupiter. Can't really explain it, but you know, so there's that. And then there is also the fact that, you know, I would say, this is like something I would regularly say to my mom, I think I'm an alien. And she would say, that's not possible, because I never had sex with an alien. And I'd be like, ugh, gag, you know, never want to hear that. But she did see a UFO in her life. She had an experience. So there's that. Okay, that's another little blip on the non-existent timeline. And then fast forward, 2018, I did a certification, like training. I trained to become a dream guide. And my teacher was a hypnotist who's also kind of like me, into a lot of different things. And anyway, over the course of the weekend long training, I had revealed some things about some of my dreams. And she said, you know, I don't say this lightly, but she took me aside, you know, and she's like, I have this checklist of like 10 things, and you have said all of them over the last 2 days. And so I just want to put this out there. Do you think that you could have some contact with, like, you know, other beings like that. And it turns out that she has been kind of running anonymous like support groups since like the 80s for people, because they come to her for hypnosis to remember their dreams or for these weird, maybe these recurring dreams. And it turns out they have experiences. And basically she said a lot of the ways that I have described my dreams over the last weekend, and also even the way that I look, she said a lot of them look alike, that they look like you, they have your bone structure. It's kind of like a running joke that they're all related. And yeah, so there was that. And that just like felt really affirming to me. And she actually helped me kind of translate one of my dreams that was a very profound dream for me at the time. It was like involved my grandma. And my grandma is somebody that I was very close with in this life. And but she died when I was really young, and I have tried to contact her or feel in contact with her spirit. And I kind of always felt like I failed. And this dream made me realize that I was kind of looking in the wrong place. And now I do have an ongoing connection with her. I actually have a ritual I do with her every single night of my life for the last few years that makes me feel very connected. But I think she's in that kind of space.
That other space.
Yeah.
That out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah. So,
I mean, so many people, I think, go through their lives feeling a certain kind of disconnect from whether it's a relative that's passed on or to something outer, something else out there. And, you know, I think a lot of them aren't able to, you know, plug the cord into the wall. They aren't able to figure out how to make the connection and how to get plugged into it, unfortunately. Maybe because of, you know, social taboos about even talking about it. And although I feel like we all can see that those are starting to melt away slowly but surely, but I think we still have a long way to go. Have you found yourself like tapping into this, I guess, the sense of connection to like alien energy in your work?
Not as much as I would have thought. You know, it's interesting as a hypnotist, because it is so, to me, it's very all-encompassing. It's now the main avenue through which I will go to these other places, or it's kind of mellowed out, especially over the last few years. I think it's a good thing actually too, because I've been very disconnected from real world people. I moved during the pandemic. And so the way that I practiced, you know, I don't have a lot of social life where I am now. And the way that I practiced hypnosis had to evolve a lot too, because it was remote and, you know, I didn't want it to be as relaxing. I don't know. There's a little bit more of like a groundedness to everything now, but it's great because I still feel that connection to all. And in hypnosis, because I think it's all the way that I'm framing it for people to make it accessible, because I want people to know hypnosis and not be scared of it. And the old way of doing hypnosis is like, you know, it's like you're my subject. I don't use that word. You know, you're not a subject. You're not being subjected to anything. This is your autonomous decision to go mining for information from the field that has a little bit, like you have access to everything. And that's one of the things I started learning right away. So in hypnosis, you know, as I was becoming like practicing hypnosis in the beginning, I was doing Akashic Records readings at that time. I was kind of new to doing readings with people, and I was trying to incorporate it into the sessions, but actually that is a byproduct of hypnosis. So they can just go there. The clients can go there. They have access to more, so much more. And we all do all the time. We just don't realize it. But when we eliminate those other distractions and come into a focused mind space with a very clear intention of the outcome, then you can get information, you know, from within your own subconscious, from your higher self, from other places. And it doesn't really matter where, as long as you get that result that you were looking for. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
There, you know, there's many different roads that lead to Rome, as they say, or mm-hmm. whatever, or all paths lead to Rome. And what you're describing sounds something very similar to what, you know, practitioners of magic will talk about when they're trying to get into like a deep ritual state or manifestation. We're talking about something that is also, you know, has the similarities of, you know, very religious people when they get into deep states of prayer, or monks when they're, you know, meditating and trying to become one with the allness that is everything around us, and tapping into this collective, you know, subconsciousness and collective consciousness in general. and then having access to this information. I've always been fascinated by the Akashic records because the, you know, it's one of those, you know, it's a major woo-woo thing for skeptics. When we start talking about like the cosmic library of all knowledge of things past and future, right? And, you know, then people will start getting into arguments about predetermination and destiny and free will. And, you know, we don't have to get into that here today, but this idea that we can tap in and we can access and, you know, for the betterment or the improvement of our current state. And that doesn't necessarily, I think, mean, oh, how do I make more money? I need to start seeing a hypnotist and, you know, figure out how I can increase my revenues. Although I think that, you know, that can lead to the betterment of life experience. But what are the big things that people are coming to you for? Is it like the big three that, you know, a lot of therapists will talk about, like love, money, and, you know, relationships and or work and health? I guess right. Health, money, and relationships, right? Are those the big three?
Not for me, no. I a lot of health, yes. A lot of people seeking to be more active has been a theme, and also stopping smoking. I love helping people with that. I do timeline collapsing, and I do think, you know, there's a lot of neuroscience as to how I practice, like, you know, but also I do think when we tap into those desired outcomes, we're kind of like strumming a little chord in the quantum field and giving it more and more attention. And then we can kind of track that back to now. And then that's just like out there as a potential, but it's also in our mind. And, you know, and so we have experienced another option in hypnosis. So yeah, timeline collapsing and phobias. I love helping people stop, you know, overcome phobias. So yeah, I think when I started doing hypnosis, I wanted it to be more mystical. I do work with a lot of witches though. So that's like my main client base, you know, they believe in magic. So we can do the timeline thing and I give rituals to support them or ideas. And, but yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah. I guess it's like a lot of smoking phobias and timeline jumping, timeline collapsing stuff.
Well, that's
like that.
Interesting. I want to talk more about that real quick. We're going to take a quick little pause here for a commercial break. You can go to patreon.com/Ryan Singer and you can get ad-free episodes. All the interviews and 30-year bonuses are ad-free. patreon.com/Ryan Singer, $3 a month. No commercials. So we'll be right back.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back. Okay. So I'm here with Desiree, who just said a phrase that I've never heard that I really want to just talk a lot more about because it fascinates me. And that's timeline collapsing. Yeah. What the hell is a timeline? I'm having a hard time saying that. Timeline.
I know. I always want to say timeline.
That's what I was going to say. I always want to say timeline, which would be a great like drink on the astral plane. Come get some timeline.
Gotta make that.
So we're talking about timeline collapsing. Now, can you just walk me through this one again for me so I better understand it?
Yeah. So I'll give an example, because how I moved here to where I am now. So I'm from New York. I've lived in New York City for the last like 20 some odd years. And then I moved to Oakland, California. And that came in meditation. A pin landed on a map next to a lake in like peak dark pandemic time. Like, it was such a rough time being like locked down in Brooklyn, no nature, just like housebound, just like, oh my gosh. And I was just in meditation like a lot. Thankfully, I have that as like a backbone, because that's how I survived. And yeah, pin landed on a map next to a lake. And I knew it was in Oakland, California, but I'd only been to Oakland a few times. And I was just like, oh, I have to go in there more. And I looked it up, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, there is a lake in Oakland. Anyway, like, it's very weird. So I started going in there more. I set a timeline for myself. This was July 3rd of 2020, and I was going to turn 40 the following January. So I was like, I'm going to move there before my 40th birthday. And 6 month time. And since then, I've done a lot of timeline jumps in these 6 month things. So you basically, what I do for a timeline jump is I put in all of this stuff that would probably take a lot more time, but just go into the reality of that. So imagine how I feel, like, what is it like? And then trace it back to now. Where can I find those feelings now, even if that is not real? Because at the time, you know, my therapist in July of 2020 was like, write down on a piece of paper all the ways you can possibly make that happen. I'm like, it does not work out on paper. It just doesn't. That's depressing. I can't do that. I'm just going to go in meditation and like find the ways, you know, just like geek out on this vision and flesh it out. So as I started doing that, I had a vision of all these palm trees. And I told one of my friends who lived in this area at that time, and they're like, there's not that many palm trees in Oakland. Like, I don't know where that could be unless you live here. And I'm like, anyway, I found this apartment. So I came here Halloween of 2020. I had a spell that was going that whole time. I like burned the petition and put it in the bay, the ashes in the bay under the full moon on Halloween. It was so magical. And then, so this is where these time, and at this time, during this whole time, my dreams were giving me these incredible, so that's mostly how I work in the Akashic Records now, is through my dreams. I set these intentions, ask these questions before sleep, and I get them in a flood as I wake up in voice notes. They just come in through like a voice in my mind, and I can write them down. Sometimes they're really practical. Sometimes it's like poetry or prose, and I look them up all the time, and it's like it doesn't exist elsewhere. So it's like really nice. It's these personalized things that just apply to my life and my path. So I got this message saying, like, you know, there's no such thing as loss. There's only choosing new timelines. And that was like so powerful. And it made it really easy to like let go of all the things, you know, as a New Yorker, leaving New York, leaving your apartment, like all the claims to, you know, the ease and the convenience, and just choosing this new lifeline. Anyway, I found my apartment just a few days after Halloween. I was supposed to fly home on election day, and my mom asked for me to not fly home because her job sent out some alert about civil unrest, possibly at JFK in New York. Don't fly into or out of it due to the election. So she's like, can you stay another day? And I did, or a few days. And that day I would have been on the plane was when I got the call back from the realtor at this apartment. I looked at this apartment. I fell in love with it. It was exactly what I imagined. And I moved in like a month and a half later. And I didn't know until I moved in, because when I looked at the apartment, it was nighttime. I have 9 palm trees out my window. And this is what I was seeing in meditation, like all those months earlier, like a row of palm trees. So that's what I wake up to every day now. So that's like a timeline collapse. You know, that I feel like it shouldn't have happened in the amount of time. I started the pandemic with literally $0 in my bank account. But just upon making that decision, okay, more happens. So this is what, you know, so we leap out like a year and a half or something and say, this is what I want by this time. And then you just like bring it back. Let's say now we're just like, bring it back to now. And ask your subconscious, like, what can I start doing now? My dreams gave me the outline for a course that made me like able to make the most money I had made during the whole pandemic and ever as a hypnotist at one time. So I made a month-long course in dreams through my dreams. And, wow. And that's what made it possible. And then that started building the momentum. I got a few clients from that. And that's how I was able to afford a move cross country. I had literally $0. I invested in a a business coach at the beginning of the pandemic who turned out to be like a QAnon conspiracy theorist. I then had to hire an attorney. So I had like, and then all my jobs got canceled. I used to be a tailor and a costume designer in New York. So so I started with zero, and I don't know.
Well, okay. So when you're saying timeline collapse, you're not talking about like, when I hear the word collapse, I think the collapse of, you know, the collapse of civilization, you know, Alex Jones's voice is in my head, like the collapse, the grid goes down. But you're talking about kind of condensing, and like, it's like, okay, so I see what you mean here. So there's not like a destroying or discarding of a thing as much as, you know, we're collapsing that longer timeline into something shorter.
Yeah,
right.
Like bringing a tape, it's like retracting, maybe a tape measure, I imagine.
Okay,
like
got it.
Retracting it.
Okay, I mean, timeline collapse is a very dramatic, and I really enjoy that term. Okay, so yeah, this is interesting because I was going to ask you about like, okay, what prompted the move during the pandemic? Because you had mentioned that. That is, I mean, if there is a good reason to move across the country, that is one. To have the visions, like you're having precognitive dreams in a sense of, well, not even in a sense, I mean, you know, right on, precognitive dreams about your future, you know, what you'll be seeing in your future. That's really remarkable.
Yeah.
Was this something that was, I don't know, like, have you experienced that in the past, even without actively trying, even when you were a kid? Did you seem to have precognition and maybe the dreams or otherwise?
I did. And this is one of the things that's interesting as a hypnotist. Cause yeah, when I reflect back on the, I've had many successful, like kind of timeline jumps or whatever you want to call it, and manifestations based on like just these, like a vision, but is that an idea or was that a, and also just how I know about how the subconscious mind works. And that's why I don't care, as long as it just works, it works, because it can happen either way. Like, you know, and it's kind of like the law of correspondence, you know, it could be that I had that, I tapped into that vision, or it could be that my imagination gave me this idea and that's driving me, you know, with my motivations. Cause you know, I don't know. So that's why it's cool. Cause it doesn't really matter how it works, as long as it works. Cause I just know that as much as I want to know about the quantum field, or I want to understand it, how time, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, I can't really get too hung up on that. So it's like, just like, let's work with it and play around and treat it like a game. And that's why I think timeline collapsing is so cool. Because when I do it with a client, you know, we'll leap out, let's say 3 years or 5 years, you know, and if nothing matters, almost anything can happen in that time, right? If somebody wanted a family, they could have it in that time. If somebody wanted a house or started from zero and wanted a job or anything, they could probably have it in 3 years or 5 years. So just like leap out, what is that life like? And what are the feelings, you know, and then we're starting to attune our mind. We have this little reality filter in our mind, on our brain, the reticular activating system, literally like in the brainstem. And that is what's filtering your experience. And you start to see different things that you would, you know, pick up on little things. You know, we are so hyper attuned. We just don't realize it. We're used to like the things that we are used to. And when we are in hypnosis, and we stir up the little algorithms, and then you can focus, your focus finds different things. And then through practice, that becomes just the way that you look at the world. And so I don't know. Going on a bit of a tangent, but
well, no, I mean, we love tangents here.
Yeah.
So thank you. Continue. Please continue tangentially. I love this idea too. I mean, obviously my mind is racing and I'm thinking about, oh, okay, these are all the things I need to do. Or these are the timelines I want to collapse, and et cetera, et cetera. And tapping into those feelings and, you know, understanding what it feels like to already have it, and then just kind of operate with that. There's an empowerment to it, right? And, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, the improvement of one's, you know, entirety, like, you know, trying to improve everything. And God, I mean, there's so many different ways to go now with like what we're discussing. And, you know, I'm curious, maybe I'll ask you, you don't have to answer this because this one is, you know, might be a little too personal, but like, if there is a timeline you're currently trying to collapse, and in what might that be? And maybe what are some of the ways you're going about it?
Yeah, I actually did a timeline. I traded sessions with another one of my now a graduate of my hypnosis program, but they did it their way, you know, so they do a timeline jumping in a little bit of a different way. And I experienced theirs and it was pretty similar, you know, I could understand. But that, okay. It's cool the way it works out, but you don't see it until you kind of like further along the path, right? So there's like, so I'm writing a book actually. And the way that that came about, and I'm speaking at a few conferences this summer, so I've become a little bit more visible in the world of hypnosis. And that is a very, you know, I will say like a traditional, maybe a little patriarchal field, like white male dominated, you know, and it's not the most comfortable place for a woman or more diverse kinds of people. It's just, it feels, a lot of people got into hypnosis from the pickup artist world, I've come to understand.
Wait.
Yeah, I know. This is a total tangent. Sorry.
No, this is fascinating.
It is.
You know, the pickup artist world, where is mystery part of that? That guy Mystery, was that his name?
Yeah.
He wasn't the guy who wrote the book, was he?
I don't think so, no. No, I only listened to that book like 2 years ago because I met a witch actually who told me that hypnosis changed their life. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, they're like, yeah, I read this book and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what was the book? And it was The Game by Neil Strauss. That's the book.
This is because, you know, my only takeaway from that whole thing is like negging, right? Where it's like, you know, guys or, you know, I suppose not only men, but I think it was mostly targeted towards men to like, oh, you know, you want to date women that are out of your league or whatever phrases we're still using regarding like levels of physical attractiveness or financial standing, which is insane to me. But it's just like, you know, talk shit to them, you know, or make them feel like they're not worth your time. And then they will want to spend time with, and it's just like, okay, this is how we're trying to build like lifelong happiness in relationships. This is insane to me. But and then
that
also
that has happened to me at hypnosis conferences. I have been negged and I haven't even realized it. I had a friend who pointed it out to me because he saw it happening and he was like, I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, like, you know. So it's just
so go on with what you were saying here. So you met this witch who said they love hypnosis because of The Game.
Yeah. So then I was like, oh, I guess I need to listen to that. And I listened to the audiobook version and I was like, wow, like, it's interesting. It's good to know that those kinds of people are out there and they are using hypnotic principles. And that's why it's so important to have our own values, standards, morals, ethics, because if we don't, if we're not aware of where we stand, you know, so then we can be kind of influenced by outer. That's how we're designed. We are always co-regulating, you know, being meeting in the middle between somebody else's nervous system and ours. That is just how we work and as humans. And so, you know, when you're aware of that, you can, you know, put up little like filters, little shields. And, you know, and this is where I think the science and, you know, there's a science of interpersonal neurobiology. To me, that's the science of Reiki, of magic, of shielding, protection, and all of that stuff, and how we can influence others because we are designed to do that. So yeah, anyway, but we have to be aware of it in order to be able to use it, you know? So hypnosis is, you know, a neutral tool that can probably be used for good or bad, I think. And that's why I think having a more minimalistic approach to it, like I do, one of my friends called me the Ramones of hypnosis. And I love that because it makes it accessible to more people, you know, especially people who think that they can't, you know, sit still or don't want to close their eyes. Like, it doesn't, you don't have to. It's your intention is almost everything. So that, yeah, there, I'm trying to find my way back from that pathway tangent. Where was I? I
don't know. Well, we were talking about how, I mean, I guess I didn't even realize, and I mean, there's no reason for me to, I suppose. I mean, because I've never read the book or listened to it, but that they're using hypnotic principles in like the dating world. And I guess it makes sense when it comes to the power of suggestion. Is a phrase that I highly associate with hypnosis just from over the years from hearing that a lot. But and also all the years I've spent in comedy clubs and, you know, whether I was a waiter or as a comedian and, you know, the hypnotists, there's comedic hypnotists and, you know, they really hammer home the idea of power of suggestion. But this idea that it can be used for, you know, good or evil, I suppose we can, you know, be a little more dramatic is, I mean, it's obvious. It's kind of like splitting the atom. Like, how are we going to use it? Are we going to use it to power the entirety of the earth for free energy for everyone so we can have clean drinking water for every person alive for free? Or are we going to build bombs and then, you know, see how many more bombs we can build than somebody else with this technology? And, you know, that might be a big way to say it, but I guess I feel like you said, the tools of hypnosis could be used. It's a neutral tool.
It is. It's a new, like everything, you know, so everything has that kind of spectrum. And that's why I'm very vocal about that's your space. Like, I'm not doing it to you. And I teach my clients, and that's probably why I don't make nearly as much money as I should, because I don't see clients for more than two or three sessions usually, because I can give them tools. I can teach them how it works. I like for them to know that. And that it just gives them so much power over their experience of life in all of these situations, you know, when, you know, especially working in New York, when like, you know, you don't have any of your own personal space. Even when you're in your own personal space, you have your neighbors usually ruin your life anyway. So it's like, but if you focus on that, you know, so, you know, it's like we have control over our sensory perceptions. And this is another thing I do with clients too, is like, you know, I help people who are like clairvoyant or mediums, you know, tune into their perceptions, but we can do that like in real time, in waking time. That's what I was doing without realizing it as like a kid in chronic pain. You know, just through practicing meditation, I noticed that I don't feel my body as much. Like I don't focus on the pain. That's, we have like, you know, hypnosis is incredible for chronic pain. Or, you know, I do get clients like who want to be less sensitive to their partner snoring and stuff like that. We can tell our subconscious mind, this is a sound that we don't need to monitor anymore. And it's safe to put that into the background, kind of lower the volume.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I am one of those people who, if I hear any kind of speech, even if it's a language I don't understand, my mind and my ears are like, what's being said? And I, like, if I'm trying to sleep in a hotel room and there's people talking in the room above me, below me, next to me or whatever, or someone in my apartment is talking and I'm trying to, you know, sleep, it's like, how can I sleep better? But that is, oh man, that would be like being able to shut that part of the brain off and be like, you don't have to monitor this anymore. That sounds like something that, you know, I would never would have thought of, but yeah, would be an amazing benefit. And I didn't even, I guess is there any limits to what, like, you know, the practice and the empowerment of hypnosis can do?
I mean, I really don't think so, because like I said, it is, I think it's also our connection to the everything. So I'd say there are no limits. And so we just have to keep removing those blocks.
Now I wonder how many, because I was just having this conversation a couple nights ago with a friend of mine who said that we have a governor on our brain that we're not even aware of, about like our strength and stuff. And so when you see, like, you know, a mother lifts a car off her child in the street or something like that, it's like we're so physically, even like on a very basic level, physically, we are so much more incredibly stronger than we even possibly think we are. And it's because we have a governor. And he said he can't remember where he heard it or read it and doesn't know if it's true. But if it were true, to be able to remove that governor in, you know, in a way to where we can tap into that power. And obviously it wouldn't only be a physical thing here, but I now it makes me wonder how many of like the best athletes in the world have like a hypnotist, right?
Yeah, I've done that. And because, you know, that's the cool thing also, like, our brain is our body. It's our nervous system. So yeah, those physical things. And that's one of the cool things. I mean, hypnotic anesthesia, that's pretty common actually in hospitals and stuff. And that's, to me, one of the most simple, but also one of the most profound applications of hypnosis is, like, it's so simple. And it starts with, like, you know, you could even do this right now. Just, like, imagine your hand, one of your hands is, like, really cold, you know, and you could close your eyes, and that takes away a little bit of the distraction of, you know, and then you can focus more of your attention on your hand. And then you could just imagine that your hand is in, this is one of my favorite things to do, is in, like, a bucket of cold water with some ice cubes swishing around, and imagine, like, swirling it around in the water. And you could hear the ice cubes, and maybe you could even see the glimmer on the water, and you can feel your fingertips growing numb. And, like, are you feeling it?
Yeah. It's weird. Like, I feel the energy shifting inside my body.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can, like, you know, and that's one of the things. So then you turn that almost, like, into a glove. They call that glove anesthesia. And then you could, like, put that on the side of your face and then make the side of your face go numb, and just imagine transferring it. But that is, like, we're talking to our nervous system with our thoughts. Our nervous system also talks to us through, you know, so there's these, like, concepts of top-down processing and bottom-up processing. So top-down processing is the brain. That's the old things that are in these neural pathways in our brain that are kind of, you know, then being acted out. And their feelings, their response to triggers that we might not even know are there, which is often what happens in, like, a case of a phobia. Sometimes those phobias aren't what we think they are, because they're involving things, you know, and they're from a time when we didn't have a lot of logic. We couldn't rationalize things. Usually most phobias originate before age 8, usually before age 4 even. So they're not rational. So that's those old things playing out through your experience in your body, your emotions. But you can also just, like, do stuff with your body and use your imagination, or even just change your posture to, then that sends signals back up to your brain. So, like, you know, when you smile, even if you don't like it, if you don't feel like smiling, sometimes I'll tell people, you know, especially my smoking clients, every time they realize that they want to smoke and then they decide not to, just smile and say, yay, I'm doing it. Even if you're rolling your eyes at yourself, because that smile is actually putting a little bit of, like, a little dopamine spike. And that is starting to make that new way of being permanent in your brain through your body. So we can speak to our mind through our body, and our body, you know, it's a two-way street. So I don't know, it's kind of cool.
That's really cool. No, I love that. Let's do a quick break here. I might have to throw another commercial. So in case I do, maybe you don't hear one, maybe you do. When you're listening to this, patreon.com/Ryan Singer, $3 a month gets you no commercials. So we'll be right back with Desiree. And we're back. Okay, so we're talking about, you know, the limitless power and the boundaryless, you know, possibilities of, you know, the power of hypnosis. And what's really cool is, I don't know how many times in my life I've been hypnotized, but it's probably less than I can, you know, I could probably count them all in one hand. But this idea of the practical use of using hypnosis as anesthesia is amazing. And in the amount of people who, well, not amount of people, I don't know the number, but, you know, and there's famous books, you know, Many Lives, Many Masters, Life Between Lives, I think is the name of the other one, with, you know, hypnotists, therapists who have become believers of past lives. We haven't even talked about past lives, and I don't think we're going to have time to today. Maybe we'll just have to have another conversation in the future, potentially.
If I'd love that.
Okay, good. because, you know, past lives is a thing that I can never get enough of. And it's just really, really fun to talk about past lives. But I want to talk about self-hypnosis, because I think most people, when they think of hypnosis, they think of, you know, a hypnotist and a patient or a client, right? And they don't necessarily think of the self-hypnosis aspect and the benefits and the power of this practice.
Yeah, I'm so passionate about it. So that's, like, one of my main drives is, like, making hypnosis. I see it as a life skill. I think everyone should know it. And there is a saying in, you know, in the hypnosis world, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. You know, we say that because we want to drive it home that, like, you know, I'm not making you do this. You want to do this. But I don't think all of our language in the industry, I'm saying, supports that by calling people subjects, you know, and you know, putting them in deep trances. That's why I love a light trance, because a lot of my clients identify as neurodivergent or having ADHD, and they really believe that they can't sit still. They really believe that they, you know, closing their eyes, like, gives them anxiety. Relaxing, that word gives people anxiety sometimes. Wow. And so it's really interesting. That's one of the things that I've found over the last few years. Most of my clients, the people who come to me, don't want to do these long relaxing inductions. And so that's why I have something called a microdosing hypnosis, which is, it's based on the same concepts of microdosing psychedelics. You know, it's kind of you're proving to yourself, you know, it's sub-perceptual, but it manifests in bigger things over the course of time, you know. So by practicing low stakes, little things, little exercises, and one of the best ones I can think of is just like being more mindful when you're on your phone, because one of the most, you know, recognizable, relatable hypnotic inductions, one of the first ones I ever learned as a hypnotist, is eye fixation. That is, you know, our eyes, when we stare at something, I think most people can relate to this too. This is a great trance, you know, when you're zoning out and you're just staring at nothing or something or nothing, and you could be around people, right? And sometimes, like, this would happen to me when I'd be at work. I would just be like staring out a window and someone would be talking to me and I'd be like, oh, I know I have to answer them, and I have to like rip my eyes away from this nothing that I'm staring at. And then I do, and then the trance is broken. But that's a great trance. You know, we're aware of everything around us. Our eyes are just kind of locked on this thing. We can hear things. We just want to be there because it feels good. That's self-hypnosis. So, you know, when you're on your phone, like, you know, that's like a hypnotic induction. And there is neuroscience to support that. We're visual creatures, you know, our eyes are this external part of our brain, and we're actually like signaling that this is important by engaging the visual system. And there was a woman at NYU, Emily Balchettis, who did research mostly in I think it was athletes or people who want to work out more and have these goals of being more active, staring at something, like narrowing their visual field for 30 to 60 seconds, like staring at a spot on the wall, actually gives them much more motivation to do those things if they do it before any goal related activity.
Really?
She thinks this maps over to other things, but when I heard that research, my first thing was, well, that was the first hypnosis induction I ever learned, was like staring at something on the wall and just, you know, letting your eyes kind of start to blink, and when they feel like they're ready to close, let them close. But that's a hypnotic induction. So we are in these familiar mind states all the time. When we lose track of time, most people who drive know about highway hypnosis, like, you know, you don't remember all that time elapsing. Where did you go? Your subconscious knows what it takes to get from point A to point B. And, you know, it can allow certain information to just, you know, fade into the background. You don't really have to be there for that. It's an automated state on our devices, on our phones, on Instagram or TikTok, whatever your preferred social media thing is. We get lost in there sometimes and we lose track of time, right? It feels like 15 minutes, but maybe it was 45 and you were just like scrolling and staring. So I think the eye fixation is like, that's the most relatable trance. And to start there for self-hypnosis is like, I have this exercise called iPhone reorientation. And it's just about like realizing that you're on your phone. And then, you know, if it's safe to do so, allow yourself to close your eyes and just place your phone down and just bring that attention that you had on the screen right into your mind with an idea, just an intention, something that you want. Maybe it is that little timeline jump. Where do you want to be in a year? But you're just starting to train your subconscious to come back, you know, you're training your attention, your awareness to come back from that external, you know, little hypnotic device or whatever. So yeah, self-hypnosis is just about your intention and training yourself to draw that attention back within and be comfortable there. A lot of people don't like closing their eyes and being with themselves. And it can just start as simply as that, just moving it within for a few seconds, microdosing it.
Wow. It's, I guess it's difficult for me to wrap my brain around in some respect. And it's probably because I'm 46. And I didn't grow up with, you know, with an iPad as a baby, and a cell phone as a kid, but the not wanting to I mean, is there anything better than just closing your eyes?
Just listen, like... I know I'm 42 and I'm like, I don't scroll a lot, but that's my clients' lives. I survey people. So I always like to know what their experience is. And yeah, it's fascinating to me. A lot of people really believe that they can't, or they just don't like being in their thoughts. And that actually is a lot of sleep disturbance happens from that too. So, you know, it's like those moments before sleep. Like I always say, don't fall asleep, go to sleep on purpose, because, you know, that's your, you have a free self-hypnosis session between in that little liminal place as you fall asleep. That's a great time to do self-hypnosis. And when you're waking up too, and just whatever you can do to be comfortable with your eyes closed, but still kind of being aware, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I understand, you know, we live in a world of caffeine, sugar, and the totality of the world's history and information in the palm of our hand. And it's, I mean, between vape pens, high fructose corn syrup, and cell phones, it's just in, you know, it's just in, you know, it's in caffeine and coffees, and it's just, you know, it's really just winding everybody up. And I think we can kind of, you know, you hear a lot like, oh, we've never been more divided and all this other, you know, whatever. I think it's kind of, you know, a lot of BS, but it's one of these like narratives that like, if we say it long enough, it'll be true. But when you're out and about with people in person, it's obviously, mm-hmm. I think most people understand it's a much different situation than it is on the internet. And, but everybody's just so jacked up all the time. And I mean, I've been drinking coffee, you know, I love caffeine. I love getting, you know, kind of sped up. It's always been one of my vices, but but those moments when we can tap into and, you know, kind of just be there in those spaces. And that's what I think one, my big takeaway from hypnosis in the past has always been, oh my God, this has been, you always feel so good.
Yeah.
At least I have afterwards, and, mm-hmm. you know, during, and then especially afterwards, you feel it much more calm and peaceful and kind of in tune with yourself. It's almost like you can hear things. Even we were doing the hand, the cold hand exercise. It's like, oh, I'm aware of the energy moving inside of my body right now.
Right.
When, you know, maybe when I was younger, I would have been like, oh, there's something, my arm feels weird, you know, and you would have just kind of blown it off. Like, why did my arm feel weird? But now like you're older and you realize like, oh, that's energy moving through my body. And, you know, kind of changing into something else or doing
in response
something.
To your mind, you know, it's so cool. Yeah. And I think, yeah, hypnosis is so powerful and it is very healing just in and of itself, because we don't often spend that time. A lot of people, I do, you know, but like spend that time with their eyes closed, turned within, also with someone, you know, so it's like, it has to happen now. And it's very powerful.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with this 30 to 60 second. What was it called again, specifically the focus?
Yeah. Eye focusing. Yeah. I call it the thing with the phone. I call that iPhone reorientation, because you're realizing that your eyes are fixed on something, and that is a hypnotic induction. It's just becoming conscious of that, you know, and if it's safe, allowing your hand to kind of descend. I have a track in my hip. It's going to be in my book too. And in my hypnosis, I have a dispensary of hypnotic microdoses. Love a pun, but it's in there. Yeah. But just, you know, realizing where your attention is and then drawing it within and letting that, you know, that weight of the phone that has all the information of everything, more than you could ever possibly hold in your hand, and just like put it down, go back in here. Cause we have that in here too, you know?
Wow. That's, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that, because, and that's what we're just not aware of, right?
Yeah.
So many of us, we get distracted and be like, oh, I need this transactive brain because I'm less than, I'm not enough, for whatever reasons, whatever narratives we have running in our minds about that. But that the true ultimate knowledge of everything we truly need is, it is right there for us already. And yeah, we just have to accept that we know it. I mean, but you know, with that comes, you know, taking some responsibility for our actions, which isn't always great. You know, it's like, oh, I want to be irresponsible, you know, or immature still. And it's like, okay, well, you know, give yourself an outlet every once in a while, maybe, like, you know, like the government lets the citizens have, like the 4th of July, to, you know, even though they're illegal, they're going to let you set off fireworks because they know they need to have a citizens need a release valve every once in a while. Right.
So, I never thought of it like that. That is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's someone, I mean, I didn't come to that realization on my own. Someone right. much smarter than me, you know, was informing me about like the importance of holidays.
Yeah.
In countries.
It's like Saturnalia, you know, Saturnalia festival. That was that kind of thing. It was, and I think it's like the origins of around Christmas time, but it was like almost like this flip of reality where like the poor people would play the rulers and the, you know, the rich people would play like, you know, paupers, and they switched roles. And it was just like this suspension of reality and nobody cared. And you could insult people, roast people. And it was just like merrymaking.
Yeah.
And it was a release valve.
Yeah. And it's so everything doesn't boil over. And yeah. So, which is interesting to think about, but this has been a really fun chat. I'm curious, when does the book come out? Do you know?
Yeah, this year. I a psychic told me it had to happen this year. It would be irrelevant. So I've been working on it for a while, but it, I'm getting, yeah, speed, timeline jumping that thing, collapsing that.
Hell yeah. And that is something I am definitely going to look into, because I have a couple big ticket items on my agenda that I really want a timeline yeah. collapse them. So, you know, that's definitely something I'm going to be looking into. And okay, yeah, this has been great. So let's remind, or let's tell everybody where they can get more information about you and your services and everything else that's going on, so they can find you.
Yeah. I'm on Instagram at Desmerized. That's DESMERIZED, like mesmerized, but with a D and a Z, because some people are in another place where they spell it with an S.
no shade, but that's like, you know, if you take the S out of shade and put it as Z, would that be jade, you know, throwing jade. And it's desmerized.com, same spelling.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so you do everything for the most part virtual, so it doesn't matter where anyone is. That can all be set up.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm curious.
And I am in the Bay Area too. I do some events locally as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And so I am curious, you know, you have the vision and the dream to move from East Coast to West Coast. Now that you're there and you've been there for a minute now.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Yeah, it's been a journey. Pandemic was a hard time to move. And, you know, sometimes when you make one of those big leaps, it's like you end up like, it's like a little bit of a roller coaster, and then you're back at the bottom again. And okay. Yeah. But I do love it here. And waking up to those palm trees that are out my window every day is like, that's my self-hypnosis, like to start my day. Is like, okay, I know why I'm here. I'm here at this time for a reason. I wouldn't be writing the book if I wasn't here. I would have all the distractions of New York and people and my lives there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I'm still easing into my life here. It's slow.
Well, it takes time, right? It takes time to, you know, build everything anew. I mean, I also moved during the pandemic, and I can attest to that. It's, you know, especially when you're making a big move, and it's, I mean, I didn't move cities, but I changed neighborhoods and, you know, lifestyles, but the, it's a big, you know, man, it just seems like such a different world.
The lifestyle. Then. Yeah. It was a different world. Right. And New York is a very social, you know, I think our apartments are so small, we have to get out, and we just do all the time, and people meet up, people are on time. West Coast is a little different. I strive to not make that comparison all the time, but it's just slower here, a little less social and...
Yeah. And it's, I think California is taking its time and becoming like, you know, its communities are struggling or taking their time and coalescing once again. I know in the world of comedy, I've had this conversation almost to a comedian every time, even including last night at a show, that the community, the LA comedy community, is not a thing still. It hasn't become a thing again yet. There's no personality. There's not even like quote unquote factions of the LA comedy scene anymore since the pandemic. So it's, you know, we're still in the very early stages of rebuilding community, and I'm doing my damnedest to try to be out all the time and be outside and, you know, see people, but it can be difficult. But but it's so beautiful out here.
I know.
Even though it's been super cold, but I think that has changed as of the last couple of days. I think we're finally in for summer, but well, I look forward to chatting again. Thanks for
me too. Yeah,
thanks for doing this.
I've been listening to your podcast for so many years, so like this was awesome. I already felt like I knew you anyway, so.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, you know, maybe I'm doing shows up in the Bay Area in September. So, you know, if you're around, I'll make sure I let you know. And then, I think I'm at the San Francisco Punchline on, it's a Tuesday night. It's like September 19th or something like that. But,
oh, cool.
I'll keep you posted about that. But, and then we'll do a follow up here very soon. Thanks again. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great day.